From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for millennials with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 637, Migrating to Windows Server 2019 with guest Dave Kawula. Recorded Thursday, April 4th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. And my guest today is Dave Kawula, who is a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional with over 20 years of experience in the IT industry. His background includes data communications network within multi-server environments and has led architecture teams for virtualization, System Center, Exchange, Active Directory, and Internet Gateways. He's very active within the Microsoft technical and consulting teams, and Dave has provided deep dive technical knowledge and subject matter expertise on various System Center and operating system topics, and is also a fellow Canadian, Calgary, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, go Flames. Hopefully we'll make it to the cup final.
Well, you know, the Canucks are already out, right? So we don't have to worry about, we're not going to get concerned with our rivalry because my young team didn't make the playoffs.
But you know what? The future is very bright for the Vancouver Canucks.
I tend to agree. We got some amazing, amazing players and they can stand some seasoning.
How do you find all the best Swedish players in the world, and why do they always go to Vancouver?
I wonder if it's not the Sedins just saying, you know, you want to go there. Like, there's something going on. You're not wrong. Like, Pettersson, I have got a chance to watch him a couple of times. The kid is magic. He's magic. And he's what, 21?
He's so skinny. He's so strong.
And he does that. He does that Burré thing that suddenly he's moving faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
And the puck is then it's like, hey, the puck went in the net. How did that happen? So, yeah, it's good fun. And sorry for folks who are not hockey fans, but when two Canadians get together and we have to sort of put our hockey debate away, and the Flames Canucks rivalry is not a small thing. It's not a Flames Oilers rivalry. But it's, you know, same sort of thing. Although the rule with Canadians is when the playoffs start, we keep rooting for the Canadian teams.
Yeah, until they're done. And then you have to have a backup team. That's what I have. So Pittsburgh is my backup team.
Yeah. So, well, of course, because led by Sidney Crosby, a good Canadian boy from Nova Scotia.
That's right. Absolutely.
Let's talk tech, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on. What have you been working on these days?
Oh, you know what, Richard? Thank you very much for having me on the show today. It's my pleasure to be here. And you know what? I've been doing all things Windows Server 2019.
So it's really a thing, huh? It feels to me like it's taken a while for people to really grab onto 2019.
Well, funny story about that. When Server 2019 first hit the market, I was so excited. I waited a long time for the release of some magical features that were coming, like deduplication for the new REFS file system, which was amazing. So I was one of the first ones that was waiting on the volume license download site.
Right.
I downloaded it. I installed it. I actually upgraded my first server the same day.
You're talking crazy talk now, friend.
Just wait. This gets better. And this is why maybe that you should take a little bit more of a cautious posturing instead of just, you know, jumping on the bandwagon. The good news was it was a non-critical server that we had. I had it as like a backup target.
Right.
Microsoft pulled the media later that afternoon. Right. You couldn't get access to it for over a month and a half. And so I'm sitting there with the wrong binaries on a production upgraded system.
Oh, my goodness.
Wonderful.
Yeah. You have a unique machine now.
Yes. Yes. The good news is that Microsoft allowed us to upgrade to the later bits afterwards.
Right.
So I kind of got myself out of a bit of a sticky situation, but
because they could have stranded you, they could have said, hey, yeah, nobody touched that version, you know, just blow your machine and rebuild it.
They could have absolutely done that. So I'm so thankful that I was able to work my way out of that jam. But the cool part was when I upgraded that machine, and I enabled the deduplication features for our brand new REFS. Well, REFS isn't really new. It's been out since like 2012, but for Server 2019, it was the first long-term servicing release where we could do deduplication
right
on an REFS volume. And I returned about 70% of my space. I had a backup server that had about 30 terabytes of data on it, and there was about 4 terabytes free. After wow. I ran the first dedupe pass on it post upgrade, that's all I did is I basically just popped in the Server 2019 ISO. I did an in-place upgrade, enabled the feature. 5 minutes later, I was able to turn it on. I was back to 24 terabytes free.
So this is the resilient file system you're talking about when you say REFS.
Yes, it is the resilient file system. So it's a better structured file system than our good old NTFS that's been around for, 25 plus years. So
Have we had it since like 2012?
Yeah, it has been around since 2012. Okay. And we're actually on version, I think, 3.4, if my memory serves me correctly. So,
well, you said 3 and that's the magic number, right? Microsoft always seems to get it right by version 3. So yeah, if it was 2012, then 2016, now 2019, this should be the perfect version of REFS.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's come a long way. And there's actually some pretty good tracking on feature enhancements that have come with REFS. And one of the biggest features inside of there was the addition of what was called block clone technology, where if we had to take and, for example, spin up copies of data like virtual machines, mm-hmm. cloning them, merging them, snapshots, things like that, we could leverage that API that was built right into the file system to have lightning speed response.
Nice.
Instead of waiting hours and hours. We went from going on an NTFS volume doing merge operations on files from 10 hours to a matter of minutes. And right. that was even pre-Server 2019.
That's really interesting. I just wonder how many people have actually taken a look at REFS, because messing with file systems is not a trivial thing. Like, we've used NTFS for a long time.
Well, and NTFS isn't going anywhere. So I just want to make that clear okay. to our listeners, mm-hmm. because REFS has a very specific place in our data centers and on our machines. And the big thing is it can't be used as a boot volume. So you can't actually install a Windows OS system or boot partition
right.
to that REFS volume. So we're still, even on your Windows 10 machines, you still have NTFS as your primary volumes. You can still format a volume as REFS as your secondary drive to take advantage of some of the new features. And inside of your Windows Server landscape, if you check things like SQL Server or Exchange Server, you check the recommended volume partitioning suggestions for the later versions, they're all suggesting that you take and that you go with a new file system.
Right. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me that you run a mirrored pair of, I would imagine, SSDs as your boot volume. And then you just have an array of dumb drives that REFS owns?
Yeah, pretty much. And mm-hmm. it's actually not REFS that owns them. REFS integrates with what's called Microsoft Storage Spaces technology. Okay. And then in a distributed fashion, you can actually link multiple servers together to get a bigger pool of storage. And that's called Storage Spaces Direct. And that is Microsoft's dipping their toe into the hyper-converged marketplace where, we can get rid of the, traditional SAN, the storage area networks, where you're running iSCSI or Fibre Channel. Now we can actually just take advantage of those direct attached disks that are right inside of our servers and build our own storage pools, build our own SANs. Use software for it.
Right. And this, we've been talking about this forever, that where Microsoft was going was you're just not going to buy dedicated SANs. You're just going to have arrays of drives and it would take care of the rest.
Yeah. And do you know who's one of the biggest subscribers of that type of technology is your cloud providers.
For obvious reasons. Yeah.
Your Microsofts, your Googles, your Facebooks of the world, they don't go out and buy SANs. They're taking and they're building software-defined infrastructure, mm-hmm. and specifically software-defined storage. So what I like to tell my customers and my colleagues when we look at this type of a technology is you have to think that, especially with Microsoft, the innovation that goes into Azure is just billions of dollars of, research and development every single year that Microsoft dumps back into the cloud to continue innovate and, provide amazing solutions. What we get to see on in the on-prem side is we get to take advantage of that because it's like Microsoft backporting those features to us. And so we've seen an escalation of these features coming into the operating system at a faster and faster pace. And I directly attribute that to all of the work that's done, you know, cloud-wise, because, you know, pre-Azure and, you know, everybody jumping into cloud-first everything, you know, you go back 5 to 7 years ago, you know, the evolution of the OS wasn't quite as fast as what we see now. And so that's kind of what I contributed to. So that innovation in the cloud is helping us with our, you know, on-prem needs.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's good enough for Azure, it's probably good enough for you.
Yes. Absolutely.
It's a pretty safe bet. So you mentioned doing an in-place upgrade.
Yes.
Which
scary.
It's kind of out of fashion, isn't it? Like, or is that the preferred method? Like, what is, are there recommendations about the, how do you adopt 2019? My instinct is to just use new hardware or build a new VM with the new OS and go from there. But I'm all ears or in place. I hadn't done it in a while.
And you know what? That is the utopia.
Right.
That is the utopia, thinking that, you know, we've written down every single setting from when we built that IIS server. You've taken and you've written down every single setting when you took and you built out your remote desktop server or whatever it was that you were running inside of your infrastructure. The truth and reality is very, very few organizations have repeatable build processes.
Right.
Most actually still build in what I call a right-click jockey, next finish type install. And so what ends up happening is you get a configuration drift inside of there where the only way to bring that machine back in its exact state and form would be to do some type of a restore of that virtual machine. So you'd have your backup technology. That would actually be the only way to bring that thing back to life.
Right.
Nobody actually wrote down how that thing was installed.
Wait, we're not all using Box Starter and Chocolatey?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, the thing is that those automation in behind just, it doesn't exist for most organizations.
Yeah.
And that's why I said it's the utopia. That's the dream that, you know, everyone's trying to sell us, but it's just, it's not reality for what we see out in the field because two things happen in reality in IT. Number one, there's transition of resources. So it's what I call a catastrophic loss of intellectual property that happens as IT professionals transition from organization to organization. It's very seldom now that you find somebody that's been with the same organization or company for, you know, 10, 20 plus years. They've moved around. And so when they move around, there's a loss of knowledge that goes with that. And so typically what happens is we compartmentalize that into sections of the infrastructure and we say, listen, we're not really sure how Johnny built that server, but we know that it's really important.
Yeah.
And it needs to stay on because if it turns off, we get a lot of tickets.
Right.
And that's a reality for most organizations. And we live with that for an extended period of time. So now, I happen to be running a bunch of that infrastructure, let's say on server 2008 R2. Well, now we have a bit of a problem because server 2008 R2, Windows 7, they're going end of life come, you know, January 2020. So what are my options? How can I actually upgrade this stuff? And so there's a couple choices. Like you mentioned, you can do the wipe, reload, and pray.
Yeah,
that's what I call it because very seldomly have I ever seen that work without major tickets or, you know, even to just do a single server, the amount of work just to do that is a lot. So we have to buy ourselves some time. And I look at it this way, Richard. I look at it the same way that we would when we had the virtualization wave come in. Everybody was like, oh my gosh, you can't take and you can't virtualize physical servers. You need to build fresh servers. Well, do you know what we did? We had no way to rebuild those in a virtual environment.
Right.
We ran what was called a physical to virtual conversion and we converted those things. Guess what's sitting as my VMs still?
Those.
It's all of those P2V virtual machines. They're still there. And so, when we look at something like, you know, server 2008 sitting in the data center, even if I have to look at doing a double hop upgrade and, you know, push it to, you know, 2012 or 2016 to get to a later operating system that's supported, that's what organizations are looking at. So for example, a lot of my customers right now, we mentioned going to server 2019. Yeah, they may not. They may actually just step up one level. They may go to 2012 R2. I know even that's pretty old right now, yeah. But it's still a majority of servers that are out there in the marketplace today, and it buys them more time, because if it buys them another 3 to 5 years, maybe those applications are going to be moved to the cloud in 3 to 5 years. So it's a matter of buying yourself some time and, you know, saving yourself some pain.
And they extended the lifecycle dates for 2012 anyway.
They did, and Microsoft seems to do that with every release anyways. Here's the hard and fast date that's coming up. And, oh, by the way, January 2020 hits. We see that not everybody was able to hit it. So we'll give you a little bit more time. You can't bank on that, but it's just, that's the truth of what's happened in the previous 2 to 3 OS release cycles, right?
Absolutely. And Dave, I'm going to interrupt you for one moment for this very important message. Windows Server and Active Directory go hand in hand. And so do Windows clients using group policy alongside Windows Server and Active Directory. What's the best way to get more Windows 10 management with group policy and your Windows 10 machines? With Policy Pack, of course. Policy Pack completely eliminates the need for local admin rights, manages Java and browsers. With Policy Pack and a few clicks, you're designing the perfect Windows 10 start menu, taskbar, file associations, and Windows features. Learn what hundreds of administrators already know. Policy Pack is the best way to get more from Active Directory and group policy to manage your Windows 10 machines. Go to policypack.com today and start your free trial. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's my friend Dave Kawula. And, you know, I've come to appreciate this idea. Someone told me years ago that Microsoft figures out which way the parade is going and runs in front of it. That we as customers actually have quite a bit of sway when we haven't upgraded, that they do extend these life cycles. Or maybe it's just certain customers. You know, I got to imagine I know it was the U.S. Navy that said, you know, we're not going to give up XP anytime soon. How much do we have to pay? They just made a deal. They're still using XP. But it's interesting that these extensions keep coming. At the same time, I mean, I'm looking at the benefits in 2019, and we talked about REFS for the first half of the show, but that's not the only thing. There's lots of good stuff in 2019.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And so I give talks all over the world, Richard, on the benefits of going to Server 2019. Like what are the new and enhanced features that are inside of there? So the obvious big ones that are inside that people are looking at right now is software defined everything.
Right.
So being able to take and virtualize your network, being able to virtualize your storage, that one there is probably one of the biggest value adds that you have. The second big thing that kind of surrounds Windows Server 2019 is the concept of headless management. We're coming back to that again, where, you know, you shouldn't really, as an administrator, log directly onto your servers. And I know we've been told not to do that for years. Run Windows Core. You know, don't have a GUI. Well, I'm going to be the first one to admit on your show that I have been classically training people for the last 20 plus years on how to right click on things. So it's very hard to take all of those individuals that I've trained to right click on everything and tell them not to right click on anything, that we're just going to go back to a shell and a console. So, you know, Server Core has its place. But we're finding that most of our Windows admins, they like to click. You know, when something breaks, we know how to right click and fix things.
Right.
And, so Microsoft has done a beautiful job giving us a replacement for the good old fashioned, you know, Microsoft management consoles that we would used to use, and server manager that's been around forever. And that comes in the form of Windows Admin Center. And the evolution and the how fast we're seeing new features come into Windows Admin Center is amazing. And it gives us a framework, an HTML5, beautiful UI and interface to manage both our, you know, on-prem environment and then also bridge our infrastructure up to Azure.
But so it's not all MMC? What?
The MMC that, you know, was released in, you know, Windows NT, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, running, you know, Windows Explorer, you know, one components inside of them, which are super secure and safe.
Yeah. And so MMC so stable.
Yes. We've never seen an MMC crash before. Oh, no, nobody's ever seen that.
No problem.
And so one of the big benefits for us as server admins was the amount of ports that were required to remotely connect to systems when we had to take and use RPC as a connectivity method to gain access, you know, remotely to manage computers with, you know, the traditional Microsoft Management Console or even Server Manager was very painful to secure and lock down on our network. And, you know, that's at the minds of, you know, every admin right now is, you know, security, you know.
Sure.
I can't see a show of hands for your viewership, but, you know, if they could show me their hands as to how many have been impacted by, you know, a ransomware situation or, you know, some user clicked on a file and they've got malware on the network.
Yeah.
And you know what? Even although they probably wouldn't want to admit it, every single one of them has probably put up their hands.
Yeah. And it's every day, right? Like I get messages from IT friends of mine all the time. It's like they're phishing me again, or more fortunately, phishing my users again. Right? It's really interesting.
Yeah, and so those enhanced security benefits with using Windows Admin Center, we need to establish one port, one direction now. So it allows us to really lock down the network from a tools and management perspective. And when we look at Server 2019 as a focus area for this particular talk, I think the security aspects of Windows Server 2019 really come to the forefront for me. There's actually built-in ransomware protection and defense through Windows Defender and, you know, the advanced threat protection capabilities that are built right into the operating system. Antivirus built right into the operating system now. You don't have to go install a third-party antivirus product. We can manage it through Azure and through Intune, through, you know, Configuration Manager, however you want to. But the tooling is there so that when I light up new servers on my network, I'm not as worried about these things just instantly getting compromised. And so if there's a big motivation for organizations to move to a next-gen platform, the fact that I can honestly cut down that attack surface by having something like Server 2019 running my critical infrastructure, that's pretty compelling for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it occurs to me that what WinMN Center really does is bring back the right click, but not having to be on each of the servers. That you've got your right click experience here on your workstation and it can speak to the servers for you.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you can manage the latest release, the latest insider's build that came out, the 1903 build that just released a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. They actually added support for your core infrastructure role. So now you can manage DNS, you can manage DHCP, and you can start to manage Active Directory. So your good old Active Directory users and computers, that's starting to gonna go by the wayside as well.
Wow. Yeah. So you're seeing the wave come in that this is going to pick up all of these little tools that we've each learned independently to take care of various aspects of our systems living in WinMN Center.
Yeah. And then I think the long-term goal is to really bring yourself back to disposable servers where, you know, what's installed on there, we can try to easily replace those, but I really don't see that changing. So we're back to that quandary. We're back to that discussion. You know, do in-place upgrades work? And I think for certain cases, the answer is yes. So certain cases.
Right.
So let's look at a great target workload that you could possibly have for upgrading.
Okay.
For me, the number one thing that you could easily upgrade right away, your file servers. No problem. You can take and you can upgrade those file servers. We've actually seen zero issues in the field upgrading those file servers. When I start to look at my tiered applications that get installed on top of the servers, mm-hmm. that starts to get a little bit trickier.
Right.
Or my core roles, like my domain controller. So certain things that I would never upgrade would be a domain controller.
Sure.
I would always build a fresh domain controller, replicate, move over some roles. And the same thing with DNS and DHCP, because Microsoft's made it such that it's pretty easy to actually move those roles around in the infrastructure. And then at that point in time, you're kind of guaranteed fresh. But the reason that that works is the replication model is so good that we can swing those things around. So as long as your app or your service really supports that, it's pretty easy to float things around.
It's also been my experience that if you're struggling to build a new DC in a VM, like it's not syncing properly, so forth, like you have more serious problems that upgrading absolutely wasn't going to fix for you anyway.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you want to try to make sure that you clean up as much as that as you can. And the other thing that I recommend to organizations is that if you're stuck and you need to take and you need to upgrade, first thing you need to do is get yourself a good backup technology that will protect you in the event that something goes wrong with that upgrade. So for example, you know, Azure backup is very easy to set up. Get Azure backup set up. You can set it up through Windows Admin Center if you really want to. Make sure you have a backup of that server before you try the upgrade. That way, if something goes wrong, you can go back to your boss and say, listen, we tried the upgrade. We're going to roll back. We're going to go back to the drawing board. Try again.
Right.
And that's kind of the process that you have to go through. So whenever I upgrade these things, I always make sure that I have a plan B, either a replica of the server or VM or, you know, just something that I can fall back to. But I always want to lead first with trying the upgrade. And for all intents and purposes, here's another part of upgrading that people don't really see is the fact that maybe I don't even need that server anymore. Maybe that's a zombie server on the network and nobody uses it. It just sits there.
Right.
Now it's just an attack point that nobody patches, yes, manages, cares, and feeds for.
Yeah. Absolutely true. Can you walk us through an upgrade experience that you've had?
Yeah, for sure. So the scenario that I've got for you is an organization. It was actually a school board, mm-hmm, that was in Western Canada. And they had decided a few years back to really cut down the cost of their infrastructure. So they got rid of their traditional SAN. And they went with Windows Server 2016 Storage Spaces Direct, which is Microsoft's hyper-converged platform.
Right.
Well, when Server 2019 released, Microsoft was kind of alluding to the fact that, you know, we would be able to do a rolling in-place upgrade, because you have to think, there's many very large organizations that are out there in the world that just can't take downtime.
Right.
The business just won't accept the fact that, you know, I've got to change some infrastructure components, so I need to turn your stuff off. They just don't accept that. And for this school board, we had really two choices. We could wait until, you know, the evening after hours. We're lucky it was a school board, so late at night, we could have done the upgrade offline.
Right. They do have after off hours.
They did. But my problem is that as IT professionals, we have families as well.
Right.
And so for my team, I like to try to cut down the amount of time that's spent working late and emergency calls and, mm-hmm, you know, working through the evening. So a decision was made that, you know, the customer didn't want to pay, you know, overtime rates for us to work. They just wanted to pay regular line rates to do this during the day. And we said, okay, no problem. We can do the rolling upgrade for you. It's supported. And so the process looked like this. As it was a small cluster. It was like three or four nodes. There was virtual machines that were running on each of the cluster nodes that were basically, you know, we use a platform called PowerSchool here in Western Canada. And mm-hmm, that's what all of the parents log in to see the grades of all of the kids and things like that. And so the core applications like that were running on there. So very important, had external access. So what we did is we used a process in the Hyper-V cluster called live migration. We live migrated all of the virtual machines off of the first node that we were going to upgrade. We paused it inside of the cluster. We took and we rolled the upgrade on it, and then we brought it back to life. And actually, the process is very well documented on the Microsoft website. And maybe what I'll do for the viewership, is I'll send you over a link that maybe you can add as well.
For sure.
And the step-by-step, honestly, Richard, was maybe like 10 steps. It wasn't that big of a deal. And so when we're ready to roll the upgrade, we pretty much just popped in the Server 2019 ISO, and we click setup.exe. Okay, most of us have done that.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
You know, you've either installed Windows, you know, a version of Windows, it's the same general idea. Same process you'd actually think of to upgrade a Windows 7 machine to Windows 10. So if you can envision that in your head, we're just doing it server side. And then what we took and we did was we rolled the upgrade pretty much a next finish going through. There was no errors or warnings because it is a supported upgrade scenario going from 2016 directly to 2019. When the upgrade completed, we made sure that we patched everything. We brought it all up to date. And then we simply just joined it back into the cluster. At that point in time, our live migrations actually worked. We didn't have to do anything. We could bring the resources back that we had moved off. And then we moved on to node 2. And we sequentially went through each of the nodes in the cluster like that.
Sure.
And we received
just as a clarification.
Go ahead.
The 2019 as a VM host, there are benefits?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely there are benefits because when we upgrade to 2019, the scalability is there and we can do things like running shielded VMs and, you know, a bunch of advanced security features inside.
All right. So there are some significant improvements to Hyper-V for 2019 as well.
There are. So, there are. Absolutely.
Okay. And I think that's just an important part of it because it's one thing to upgrade the app servers and so forth, but you're upgrading the VM host, which is pretty much you're stuck. That's a bare metal upgrade. No way, two ways about it, unless you're literally going to buy new hardware.
No, absolutely. And normally you would take and go through and do that. But nice. You have to think of, you know, when they upgrade in Azure, they're not going to just go kick people off.
No.
They're going to have this rolling upgrade process down.
Right. And so this was a cluster of 2016 machines. Then so you pull one out of the cluster, you upgrade it to 2019. Are you immediately able to move workloads back on it? Is it back in the cluster as a mixed environment?
It was a mixed cluster. And so we were immediately able to take and to move the workloads back. Mm-hmm. And, it took, you know, it takes a little while to actually roll the upgrade, but it took about an hour, maybe an hour and 20 minutes per node. But remember, we're not taking an outage. So it really doesn't matter
how long
it takes.
Yeah.
Nobody's noticing.
Yeah.
And at the end of this entire process, the director of IT for the school board actually, wrote a note to his entire team saying that, you know, he was a little skeptical before, you know, we did the upgrade and we told him that, you know, the art of the possible. And afterwards, he was just absolutely blown away by the fact that, you know, we've upgraded to this next gen platform and there was actually zero downtime for the end users. And so I thought that was a pretty cool sentiment coming back from the client themselves because your listeners are probably still skeptical. Like, Dave, you're crazy. Well, why would you upgrade things? This is contrary to everything that, you know, we've been taught. Well, you know, inside of Microsoft themselves, do you think that they're going to go wipe, reload everything? Or do you think they're going to try upgrades as well? And where this really started to happen was with the release of Windows 10. Because prior to the release of Windows 10, I've been in the Windows deployment field for pretty much my entire adult life. Mm-hmm. And so before Windows 10, it was common. Listen, you wipe the OS, you migrate the files, you reinstall the apps.
Yep.
That's just what you do. Windows 10 really changed that. Microsoft really innovated that in-place upgrade engine starting with Windows 10. And all of that technology has been ported over server-side as well. Because, like, I don't know how many millions of machines around the world were just in place upgraded with the Windows 10 push, but it was millions upon millions of machines, and so the ability to even be able to do this with, you know, your core infrastructure, critical infrastructure like your Hyper-V host and your Hyper-V clusters, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. And very more important than we realize, I think, that this shift has gone on because we're getting OS updates all the time in Windows 10. So the fact that same mindset exists for server, I think it's going to be somewhat uncomfortable for folks, almost controversial for folks. But the reality is this is what's been going on. It's certainly what they're doing inside the cloud. We don't actually know. I mean, they could be doing wipe and reloads, but apparently from what is what the server is actually good at, they're not.
Absolutely. And you know what? One of the other pieces that I find is there's a lot of confusion around. So I don't know if we've got a few more minutes to chat about this or not, but the long-term servicing branch versus the semi-annual releases and their purpose and their place in life. And I think that my friends at Microsoft on the server team have changed their mind a lot over the last few years, because the messaging just seems to have floated. I go to all the Microsoft Ignite conferences and speak at them, and that messaging is confusing for me. And if it was confusing for me, it's probably confusing for everybody else as well.
Yeah.
And so here's the new rule of thumb that you have, is that your core critical on-prem resources that you have, for example, your Active Directory domain controllers, you're going to put those on the Windows Server 2019 long-term servicing branch.
Right.
You're going to take and put your DNS, your DHCP, your file servers, all of the things that you know and love in your data center are probably going to be on that long-term servicing release. The things that would potentially move over is if your organization is starting to focus on rapid application development, like working with containers or Dockers or Kubernetes and things like that, that's more of a targeted release for semi-annual,
right?
For those types of services. But the core infrastructure resources that the traditional IT pro would be used to, long-term servicing branch is going to be what you're going to be looking at.
Awesome. This is good news, man. I'm really excited to see the state of migrations after what I felt like was sort of a bumpy start to Server 2019, that here we are in 2019 and product sounds like it's ready to go.
Yeah, I honestly think so. Most organizations are going to be patient. They always have.
Yeah.
I still have organizations I work with that have a standard build on Server 2012 R2 because it takes time to get built what's called a standard operating environment. So anybody that's worked in a large enterprise before, they understand that you don't just go next finish every server install. Somebody on the team or the team approves what's called the standard operating environment, and that's everything that goes into the OS, from antivirus to settings to group policies to everything. And that's a real process. So I think the upswing is probably going to be on maybe the smaller customers to start with. And then the larger customers, it just takes time. Those are really big ships and it takes time to move them. So,
yeah, no question. That's just sort of reality. And I don't even feel like we're waiting for Service Pack 1 anymore, which you really shouldn't wait for because there's basically no such thing anymore. It just keeps getting patched on the fly, really. But I feel like it's time to install this stuff. It's ready.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think your experience that you're going to have in, you know, moving over to Server 2019, especially as an IT pro, if I've got a lot of IT pros that are listening, your UI and your experience that you're used to, if you can click your way through Windows 10, you can click your way through Server 2019.
Awesome. Dave Kuala, thanks so much for coming out to the show.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me, Richard. And I look forward to listening to this when she goes live.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.